This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
This just in, back again, drinking gin,
I'm drinking vodka.
I don't know. Yeah, we're not doing intros anymore, people. It's just not happening. It takes all of... Yeah, it takes all of 2 or 3 minutes out of our busy schedules of playing World of Warcraft and looking up Howard Stern videos and Borat videos on YouTube. So, they're done. Don't expect it anymore. Don't write to us about it. They're not happening. So today we've got our second official special guest commentator.
Yeah!
We had Rory, and now we have Casey, who is another friend, but an older friend than Rory, who we've known since high school-ish, or perhaps longer.
High school.
Yeah, so he's here. He is going to give the definitive This Just In review of the pop culture phenomena, Snakes on a Plane. And I guess... What was that?
Wait, what's that?
I was just saying, it is definitely a phenomenon.
Yeah, so, okay, did you go on opening night or after?
Yeah, we went opening night. We went and caught a 10:40 show.
Were there people camped outside?
No. Well, I was actually really disappointed. There wasn't nearly as many people as I thought there was going to be there.
Oh.
Well, was it sold out at least?
No, maybe a quarter of the theater was filled.
Oh, wow.
Wow, was it in one of the big theaters?
Yeah, it was in one of the main four ones, you know, the huge ones, but there was nobody there.
That amazes me.
Yeah, because it's been getting so much hype lately. This thing, they released all those teasers, like, months ago, and I've heard nothing but people saying how this was going to be, you know, this huge event for people who love campy films, you know, to go see. So I'm really surprised to find out it didn't have such a big opening, at least in our area.
Well, here's the question: what else opened this weekend?
Well, here, let's see.
Nothing.
There's nothing. Well, you know, around here, I think they started. Was that Little Miss Sunshine? That came out more locally, but that's been on the West Coast and the East Coast, I think.
Oh, you know what probably beat it. I made the big prediction that Snakes on a Plane was going to win the weekend, but it's looking like it's not, according to MoviePhone.com.
Well, now, wait a second. On IMDb, they have tops of the box office. It says Snakes on a Plane. Number 2 is Talladega Nights. Number 3 was World Trade Center. Number 4 was Accepted. Number 5 was Step
really?
Up.
What the hell
on
Step Movie
Up
Phone,
Accepted? Oh, Step Up.
Yeah, don't even bring that one up. On MoviePhone.com, they have the most popular was Accepted. Which is probably the second movie that opened this weekend. Was that, like, traditional?
Oh, Accepted.
Like, we're going to try to be, like, old school.
Was this the first weekend for World Trade Center?
I think it was.
Ouch.
Wow, it couldn't even beat Samuel L.
Well, okay, let's look at this. Before we go to the review of Snake, then the framework of those five films, Step Up, we're not going to talk about because it's a bullshit film. The guy who acts in it is such an idiot. Accepted, though, that's such a... It's part of that weird phenomenon that's coming out with, what was that movie? That one with Luke Wilson. What was that?
Old School.
It's part of this new chain of films that are going to be about college kids who aren't college kids, who are starting up fraternities, and I'm sick of them already. I'm done with them.
Yeah,
can get out of my life.
The gimmick's killed, but sadly we'll see more of them, just like, you know, Step Up is like the 12th in a line of, you know, bad boy meets traditional girl and they learn to dance together and communicate through their worlds.
Have you seen the world-class acting in that film? Like, the way that guy is so emotionless in those previews for it. Yeah, and I want to say that I would embrace a film that told me more about dancing. But you know what? There's not such a thing. I'm the perfect when it comes to dancing. I would love to see a boy meet a girl and then they dance into each other's hearts, but sadly, they never bring it forth the right material for me.
I don't know who that actor is in Step Up, but he reminds me of like Vin Diesel's son.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's a great observation, Casey.
Could you ever imagine Vin Diesel actually having a son and like holding a baby in his arms without crushing its head or something?
I think that the noise both of them make would be about the same, because Vin Diesel just goes and then I'm sure his baby would sound the same.
Like they're both gargling
blood. So and then go ahead. Well, I was gonna say the number three film was World Trade Center, and you know, I don't care how good you might think Oliver Stone is or how bad he is. I just don't care about any of these movies coming out about 9/11. I don't give a shit.
Here's my opinion on it. I heard a while back about the Muhammad Ali movie. Some insightful critic sort of said, you know, Muhammad Ali is one of the, you know, he's still alive, and he's one of the most filmed sports figures of all time. You know, there's more footage on him than on any other sports figure possibly ever. So if you really want to learn about Muhammad Ali, there's more than enough shit, you know, out there to find out about it. The same with World Trade Center. We all lived through it. It was one of the most mediated events of all time.
Yeah.
We all know the whole story. We don't really need some sappy-ass, like, romanticized version of it. It seems to be sort of a slap in the face of something we all know very, very well. Why would I want to see a movie when I already know the whole story?
Well, I'll tell you why. If you're a real American, you want to see it, Tanner. That's why. So anyway, all right. Well, that brings us at least to Snakes on a Plane. Casey, give us your definitive review.
Definitive review. Crap. Like, not even worth it. Like, it wasn't even that bad.
So it wasn't...
It could have been way worse.
So it wasn't... good camp, even? It wasn't even a good B-movie, you'd say?
No, not at all. Not at all. I was expecting way worse, like, really cheesy stuff, and they tried to make it real, and they actually did, I think.
Oh.
Like, they tried to make you believe some of the crap, and then, given Samuel L. is great, because, you know, it's just him.
Mm-hmm.
He sucks. And then there's a fat guy from Good Burger, Enan or Kel, I can't remember which one.
Well, I believe everyone would know him probably from Saturday Night Live now rather than Good Burger. Kenan Thompson.
Not me. But he actually saves the day. That's the ending. He saves the day because he plays a lot of video games.
Well, I guess it has a point. I mean, anyone who plays video games is most likely to save the day in any situation. But, okay, so take us through the plot. Samuel L. Jackson somehow is on a plane, and then at some point there's snakes on this plane. That's what I gathered from the preview. I am insightful about these things. So
yeah, I'm going to ruin the whole movie for anybody that hasn't seen it. There's this guy in Hawaii, and apparently there's this Hawaiian mafia, and this cat just driving his dirt bike. this cat riding his dirt bike.
Wait, it's not an actual cat, it's a human being. But a cool cat?
That's what I meant.
It would be, how much cooler would it have been if it was a cat?
Doesn't really matter, though. So this guy, he witnesses the head of Hawaiian Mafia, like, murdering somebody. And so, this is the best part. It's the beginning of the movie. And so instead of sneaking off quietly, he tears off on his dirt bike.
Peels out. Hey, if you've got a dirt bike, you better peel out at every given opportunity.
Well, he was just sitting in the bushes all by himself, like nobody would have to peel out. So that was ridiculous. And so, like, he's a witness to the guy who they want to take down. I forget his name. Ho Jung Kim something, I don't know. And so Samuel is the FBI agent that's going to escort him from Hawaii to L.A. where they can prosecute him. And so, excuse me. And so the mafia wants to kill him, obviously, because he doesn't want to go to jail. Apparently, jail's a bad place. And so he devises this plan to put, like, it's probably got to be close to thousands of different breeds of poisonous snakes all over the world. and put them on this plane so that they'll kill everybody on the plane, and in turn, kill this guy that witnessed the murder. But Samuel Jackson's smarter than that. And, man, from there, somehow snakes love pheromones, and they sprayed him with pheromones so that made, to quote Samuel Jackson, these snakes are on crack. And then the first, like, half of the snake bites are all the ridiculous shit you know they put in later because they knew the movie sucked. And that was, these two like young lovers go into the bathroom and they're just like making out and doing it. He gets her shirt off. Snake bites her nipple. Dead. This guy goes in and he starts pissing in the toilet. And then the snake comes up and he's pissing on the snake. What do you think happens next? Snake bites the guy's dick. And then my favorite part, I called it too. This fat Hawaiian lady sleeping on the plane. While the snakes are coming up, this big one crawls up her leg, and then it cuts away, and I cut to the person I'm sitting next to, and I go, watch. She's going to be cut back, and she's going to be smiling and loving it. What happens? Cut back. She smiles, loving this snake. And then the snake like bites into her eye, and somehow, I think, burrows her way in. And then from there, Samuel Jackson saves the day. Snakes cannot climb, by the way, because they stack suitcases to stop the snakes from coming by, because that works.
And so, in the end, Samuel L. Jackson, does he die?
No, man. Like, everybody dies, but the people that die are the people that like you want to die because they're the dicks, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was really predictable. And so the captain, both pilots die. And so then, you know, they figured out how they barricaded themselves from the snakes, and so all they got to do is land the plane in LAX, and they're good to go. And then the captain dies, or the co-pilot dies, and so then they're sitting there, and they're like, hey, who knows how to fly this plane?
Snake.
And Kenan Thompson, yeah. Oh. Kenan Thompson's like, he's like, I've logged over 2,000 hours. The plane, and as he's flying the plane, and Samuel's his co-pilot, it comes out that he's just playing PlayStation 2. But he can do it. He saves the day.
What?
Honestly, it's not even worth the $8 to go see it and like try to have fun with it. Because I was drunk the first half of the movie, and my buzz wore off. And then the second half of the movie, I was so pissed. Because the first half it was fun because it was so awful when you're drunk, but then when I was sober, it was awful.
That's pretty much that's a metaphor for every alcoholic's home life.
The first half when I was beating my wife, it was really fun, and then the buzz wore off, and I realized what I was doing.
And it pissed me off. I didn't beat her harder.
So
anyway,
that's snakes on a plane.
So there's snakes on a plane. Obviously, you didn't like the film. I'm trying to figure out, though, if there's this underground always cult followings for films. And on IMDb, so far, out of almost 10,000 votes, it's gotten an 8.3 out of 10. Now,
it's going to lower that number.
I realize it's premature, because pretty much every movie that comes out gets a high rating, and it's the test of time it has to stand to. But I'm looking at some of the recent posts from people, and there's people already, they're talking about sequels, they're talking about, you know, how much it rules, and I'm just curious. I mean, do you think that this is one of those things that within the next 4 months it'll be out of the mind of every person who's ever seen, you know, the trailer for this? Or will it be a long-lasting movie that will be in our lives for 15 years?
I honestly don't think it will. I don't think it can make it. Like, it's not bad enough to be one of those cults.
Well, it's okay. Classics. It reveals how hard it is to make a good camp movie, because there's really two ways that camp movies are made. And the first is a serious movie that is just so bad it's good. You know, like I'm thinking sort of 90s action, like American Ninja and that sort of thing, where it's so horrible it's awesome. Or like a Chucky movie where they realize their camp, and in that way it's funny enough just on the basis of how they wrote the camp that it works. But this movie, it failed as the American Ninja version of camp, in that they were first trying to make a serious movie, and it was so bad, but it wasn't bad enough, or wasn't good bad enough. And then they tried to revise it by using the Chucky formula and trying to make it, you know, consciously bad, and that didn't work. So it's like the worst of both worlds, I guess, in one movie. But the funny thing is people are getting sold on it, and there's some people who really like it. I guess they really haven't seen good camp then.
Yeah, I think that might be a problem, too. I'm reading the boards right now, and The Easy Cure, 2 days ago, post, this movie is great. It's a terrible idea, yes, but after seeing the movie, it's just plain fun. When I saw it, it was the best movie experience I ever had. Everyone was yelling and laughing and clapping. It was great fun. I don't think there will be another movie like it ever. It's what more movies need to do. Just have fun.
Hey, guess what, moron? There's been a million movies like it already. You just haven't watched them. Oh, IMDb commentators.
I know. I can't stand it.
So is it better or worse than Anaconda?
It's no Anaconda 2. But it's I'd rather watch Anaconda, I'll put it like that. Because I don't want to say it's better or worse, but I'd rather watch Anaconda.
Well, the number one reason why Anaconda is better is because it has Eric Stoltz in it.
Big time.
And even
Owen
though,
Wilson.
Yeah, and Owen Wilson. And even though Eric Stoltz gets put out of commission right away, because I have a feeling that he signed on to the movie, then realized it blew, and he was like, change the script so I get bit by a bee and I'm conscious for half the film, and then bring me back at the end. Even though that happens with him, the movie is still saved by John Voight's totally horrific performance as some South American, you know, crazy-ass motherfucker trying to bring Anaconda into the population.
The reason why Anaconda is good, though, is there was a lot of people that thought they were doing a good job on it. Yeah. Like, I'm sure Ice Cube, John Voight, and the director all thought that they were making a really good movie, and that they were all, like, nailing it. And that's why it's good, because they were serious about it. You know Samuel Jackson, he doesn't give a shit about anything. He was probably walking this movie just not giving a shit. Now, if he had actually been trying to make a good movie, then Snakes on a Plane, I think, might have been different.
Yeah.
That's the defining aspect.
I'm remembering my Anaconda experience, because I had actually bought a ticket to Gross Point Blank, and then we bought it like an hour before show, so we snuck into Anaconda, and I remember we left just as, and this was like the ultimate form of camp, just as this one guy, you remember the millionaire kind of guy who, he's like, I think he was the host of the show that they were trying to film down in the Amazon, and he jumps off of a waterfall trying to commit suicide rather than get killed by the Anaconda.
Yeah.
Anaconda latched to a branch, and just to fuck this guy over, instead of letting him kill himself, kind of whips itself down, grabs the guy just before he hits the ground, and then rolls him up and kills him. It was like the ultimate thing.
That's so awesome.
So anyway.
Yeah, let's move on. Looks like a distant dream. Sipping a drink that will slip me across this world.
Let's save the planet. I can't wait another day. So what was next?
Seattle. Do it.
All right. Let's see. A week ago, my girlfriend and I went out to Seattle. It was probably the best city I've ever been to. There's a few reasons why it's one of the best cities. Number one, the bars are incredible out there. You can go into any bar, and this actually ties into the number one reason. And some of you might not agree with me, but they have very strict smoking laws out there, which I'm for strict smoking laws in public places, and it made it such a wonderful experience to be able to go into what would normally be, here in Detroit, a seedy dive bar and not be inundated with smoke and walk out and feel like you needed to take a chemical bath just to get it off of you. And so the bars out there, they had a couple themed bars. There's this one called the Chapel Bar. And that bar, it was pretty cool because you walked inside and it was an old church that was renovated to be a bar. So it's very gothic feeling, very very creepy when you get inside. And then there was another place that was a vodka bar, and they had all kinds of different vodkas. And that was a good experience because you got to test out all that other all that kind of stuff rather than getting your typical 5 o'clock mixed in. You know, if you want a screwdriver, you get good vodka with it. You don't just get the shit vodka. And so, okay, so that was one of the best things. The number three thing that was so great, though, was was the fact that the city is so damn walkable, which is unlike anything I know around here, whereas here in Detroit, you have to drive from location to location to see stuff. In Seattle, you not only walk there, but you want to walk there. There's public transportation in the downtown area, and it's free within this certain area of downtown. You can go anywhere you want, but you kind of don't want to because, number one, the weather is fucking incredible, and number two, you're walking up these hills and you're getting a great workout, and it feels awesome. So, and when you're drunk especially, it's great to go for a walk up and downhill. Because, you know, I don't know, if anyone else is like me, when you get drunk, you love to take walks. So, and then the number four thing, which ties into taking a walk, is you never feel like you have to watch your back too closely because there's no seedy motherfuckers out there. Yeah, it's the serial killer at the fact, but I didn't see one serial killer out there. And if they were stalking me, they were sorely disappointed to find that I returned to Detroit before they could enact their murder. So... So I don't know. My point is, with Seattle, we had such a great time. You can be in the city 1 minute, and within a matter of 5 minutes, you can be on a boat and heading out to a more not rural but more like woodsy kind of less populated area. And if you feel like driving an hour out of out of the city, you can be in the mountains or in the Cascades or in Olympia National Park or by Mount St. Helens or Mount Rainier. You can go anywhere. And the landscape out there is fucking incredible. Here in Detroit, everything's flat. I don't think there's a single hill. I think the highest point is out north of here in northern Macomb County near Stony Creek. And you look off... And you can't see jack shit. It's not high enough to see anything.
It's a hill, essentially.
Yeah, it's a hill. It's a grassy knoll. And out there, though, you have mountains, and you've got this huge sound. It's beautiful. And their industry out there isn't this nasty, going to kill you because you're breathing it in industry. It's like a port. You know, it's ships docking and having crates loaded on by machines. That's it. You know?
But isn't it the case of, like, every Detroiter that when they go to travel, it doesn't make you grow fonder of Detroit. It just makes you think, like, God damn it. Like, look at all this shit I'm missing. I know there's a lot of Detroiters who like to, like, wear their Detroitness on their sleeve and, like, try to act like a hard ass or whatever when they're white suburbanites and that sort of thing, you know? And they try to play that gimmick where, like, I'm a hard ass, I come from Detroit. But the reality is Detroit's one of the worst cities in the country, hands down.
Yeah.
And whenever you travel, it just becomes this, like, you just, like, groan, like, just thinking, like, oh, my God, there's cities with, like, other shit going on.
Cities that are functional,
sports and
living.
Yeah.
It really is a stark contrast because here in Detroit, things are dead. You go downtown, and there's certain areas where downtown is thriving, but for the most part, at least 85% of the city still looks like a nuclear bomb went off, and there's entire buildings that are like 20 stories high downtown right now that are condemned, that aren't being used. And out there, every building's being used. There's actually storefronts that you can, when you're walking down streets, there's stuff to go, there's places to walk into, there's clothing stores, there's, bars, there's coffee shops, there's bookstores everywhere, great bookstores, too. I mean, some of the best places I've walked into with great selections and everything. And down here, you know, just a few miles from me right now, you walk downtown, and it's a wasteland. There's no shops downtown. They're trying to bring in lofts and stuff, but living downtown really isn't too viable at this point because there isn't anything for you to do when you go down there.
Yeah, you're like holed up in your loft, like
yeah.
It's a fortress.
Yeah, they're trying really hard down there. There are some businesses that are coming in, but the difference is like Seattle civic planning is not flawless, of course. I have my complaints, but for the most part, you can walk 2 miles north, 2 miles east, 2 miles south, and feel like you're fine walking the whole way because there's shit to do on your way anywhere. Whereas here, you know, you drive it. You want to go from bar to bar, you drive it. You want to go see a museum, you drive it. Out there, you want to go do any of those things, you walk it. Or you take a bus for 2 minutes and get off at the next stop down the road. And it's free to do that. it's just a good example of a functioning city. And, yeah, you're right, for a Detroiter, it's like a wet dream going out there. you know, I don't know. But there was an element, though, that within the safety factor... that I felt. Part of it was because, you know, out here, you do feel very unsafe in certain parts of the city. And, I mean, like, you could get carjacked or anything like that. Whereas out there, there wasn't a moment where I could handle myself or, like, I hadn't been in a worse situation, you know? So, it was definitely a difference. There's a difference. And, you know, I know we've got buddies who are out in L.A. and stuff, and they love it out there, but I wish they could see Seattle, because L.A. is like Detroit part two for me. It's really not a city I like that much, and it's too sprawled out. You can't really walk anywhere because it's so goddamn big, and, you know, it's just not as fun. Seattle was just a great concentrated, you know, there's a few million people living in the surrounding area, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like you're in a small, big town, so I don't know. Casey, what do you think of Seattle?
I've never been there, but I've heard nothing but good things. I know two people that moved out there.
Really?
They say nothing but good things about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I talked to a buddy of ours, George, and he had done, like, urban planning kind of stuff for his degrees, and he was mentioning that, and this was something Seattleites actually told us out there, but he was mentioning that within civic planning, that's an ideal city, but the most ideal city is actually Portland. And apparently Portland, which is a smaller town, it's not necessarily like the big city, but apparently the civic planning in Portland is immaculate. Like, you can get anywhere you want. The buildings are all, you know, pristine and perfect and blah, blah, blah. So I guess second to Portland is Seattle, and it shows, though. You can definitely tell. And when you do that to your city, it brings businesses in, and it makes it so it's way more welcoming for people. I don't know.
Yeah, but
it's
I think
it's just because Detroit's so shitty that you love anything else. It's not
yeah.
Like Tampa.
Yeah, but you know, I've been to Cleveland, and I've been to Columbus, and I've been to Cincinnati and Nashville, and all those places blow. I don't care about any of them, you know.
Yeah, but
maybe
how about
Indianapolis sucks?
How about Chicago and Toronto?
Chicago's all right, but it's overrated if you ask me. There's just it's not. It's all right. I could maybe spend a week in there. And actually, I've planned a vacation to Toronto in November. My girlfriend and I are going to go out now. We had said that we wanted to, after going to Seattle, we decided that, you know, we would like to, in a couple years or in a year or whatever, move out there because it's so goddamn cool. But the last time I was in Toronto was 4 years ago. And I remember saying then at the time, Toronto was badass and I want to go there again now just to check out, see if I was in the right mindset or if I was just, you know, a typical Detroiter in awe at a city that works. So I want to go out to Toronto in a couple months, see if it's a good city as I thought it, or as my impression has always been, and if it's not, then Seattle's the place to go. I don't know. I mean, Toronto's sweet, if I remember correctly, but whatever. I mean, Tanner, what's your favorite city you've been to?
London.
London. I'm talking about, all right, but okay, what was it about London that made you so impressed with it? Was it that it was a thriving city?
Subway, number one, is
okay.
The most important thing, right. I think. And number two is that it's got, like, more culture in mm-hmm. probably a few square miles than most, you know, U.S. cities have in their entire breadth. You know, so, and I think that's probably the advantage of the city being hundreds and hundreds of years older than any of our cities.
Well, you know, a city like Detroit is still old as shit, and we've got East Coast cities like Philadelphia and stuff that are old, but tell me, when's the last time you said to yourself, God damn, I want to go to Philadelphia? Never. Nobody
I've heard really bad things about Philadelphia from
yeah,
Detroiters.
Yeah,
and that's bad.
I mean, I've never really had the urge. Let me name a few cities I've never wanted to go to. I've never wanted to go to Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Baltimore.
Poor Pittsburgh.
I don't
want to go there either.
Well, I've never wanted to go to shit. I've wanted to go to I've been to Boston. I didn't mind it there, but it was all right. It wasn't anything spectacular. I never wanted to go to New Haven. let's see. Never wanted to go to.
This could go on forever. I'm sure there's thousands.
But I guess my point is, there's old cities here with culture. I think the problem is that we hate we hate multiculturalism and we want to create this, you know, terrific American culture that doesn't exist, but it only exists in the hearts and mind of Bush lovers. Anyway, let's go to the next topic, because I don't have much
segue.
Thank you.
The next topic is there was one of the running themes of the memes has always been video game laws.
Love it.
And fighting for free speech in video games. And probably a lot of you already know that the industry has been under constant fire from, I think, almost every state in the country in trying to pass laws that would require store owners to card minors for purchasing video games, and if they didn't, they could be prosecuted, which is a precedent that neither books nor music nor movies have to go through because it would violate the fucking Constitution in refusing to sell, you know, cultural products to people. And I think anybody that's not 60 years old and has a "I support the troops" bumper sticker while voting for Bush and getting troops killed would agree that parents are probably the best people to refuse children's access to violent video games and that sort of thing. So there's been laws made up by assholes in every state to try and push these things through, even though they're absolutely unconstitutional. And there was an awesome precedent set recently, August 10th, in Illinois, where the state had come up with one of these laws and tried to put it through. And my hero, Judge Matthew F. Kennelly, the United States District Judge for the Northern District of Illinois, ruled against it, shot it down, threw it out, and not only did that, but did something that was very important in fining the state of Illinois for even bringing up the law, $510,000, $528.64 fucking cents for down to 64 cents for even bringing up the law, and is now paying back like the Entertainment Software Association stuff where this law was filed against them. So it sets a great precedent in that if you're going to bring up bullshit laws now, you're going to have to actually pay for them with your own money. And it's also a great incentive where, you know, various politicians who are maybe running on a pro video game ticket can say, listen, look at this precedent. My opponent, who is anti-video games, is going to make us pay $500,000 in taxes trying to, you know, get the family vote and that sort of thing. So it's a great precedent because it gives us sort of ammo to fight this bullshit.
Mm-hmm. How did this even come up? Don't lawmakers, aren't they too wrapped up in their special interest groups to care about what kids are buying video games?
Well, this is a huge special interest group now because it gets that family vote, you know.
And that's the key, because this is something that goes beyond just, you know, typically it's Republicans who are attacking, you know, those things that attack core family values. However, the Democrats now deserve equal scorn for this because they jump onto this because it's an easy target. It's something that most people, for the most part, you know, people who are older, they don't play video games, they don't give a shit. So if it's something that's going to protect the family, they're going to vote for it. And so the Democrats have spun it in a way where they're going to try and latch onto this issue because they're not going to latch onto the more important issues that affect, you know, kids, you know, like bad parenting and shit like that. But they're, you know, this is an easy target for them to take. It's an easy thing for them to take on. And while they feel it's safe, I think now they're realizing the error of their ways because this shit isn't going to stand up in courts.
I think it also suffers from the fact a lot of people, it's one of those issues where you can go, yeah, I don't want minors to buy, you know, I don't want a 12-year-old to buy Grand Theft Auto 3.
No one does, though.
Without realizing sort of the implications for free speech that are written into these laws, where you're restricting access to cultural, artful products to people,
right,
when it should be, you know, parents or the person in charge of that minor who are restricting that, not the state. You know, no state should restrict anyone's access to any cultural product. You know, no state should say, you can't read American Psycho. You know, that sort of thing. And people don't realize that when they gloss over this shit in the paper, they think, yeah, that's right. They shouldn't be allowing minors without really understanding the mechanizations that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, no one wants a 12-year-old buying Grand Theft Auto, but the problem doesn't lie with me. I mean, I want to buy Grand Theft Auto, so don't limit anything in regards to the content of the software that's coming out. It's the parents who need to step up and say, all right, my kid is only 12. He can't buy Grand Theft Auto. It doesn't mean that you don't put it in the stores. It doesn't mean that you try and limit the creativity of software developers. Because that's, I mean, they're trying to put all these extra burdens on software developers so that there is no good market for them because the viable market doesn't pay enough money towards their product.
Yeah, and because the store owners would get, you know, okay, you sold this game, now I'm going to fine you this much money. Then they're like, fuck this, I'm not putting Grand Theft Auto on the shelves anymore. And then that affects software and developers who are driven by a market, and they're going to say, I'm not going to make Grand Theft Auto anymore. Yeah. It's bad.
I just pulled up a really good news story, though, from Louisiana, of all places. Apparently, they've got a representative there. His name is Steve Scalise, and he's the Republican, actually, in District 82. And apparently, here's what happened. Before Katrina, they had very lax laws in bringing in new, or they had how do you put it? They had this business development organization, and they were doing this outreach program to the video game industry, and they had secured the intentions of a bunch of the companies to come to Louisiana, so that they could bring business into Louisiana, and so businesses were like, okay, yeah, we'll go there. Well, Katrina hit. It messed up the possibility of them to build in that certain area, and so it kind of put a damper on that effort. And now Louisiana's trying to pass harsh laws against video games, which puts a double nail in the coffin of it. And this guy's trying to argue, look, we need the business. Why are you trying to hamper their creativity and their ability to start a thriving business in our area when we need businesses to come in here? He's arguing, let's keep our business laws lax and allow software developers to bring themselves here. And I agree with him. I mean, that's what you need to do. You got to allow the creativity so that video games can be a growing industry, not a stagnant one. And and that'll help, especially in an area like Katrina, which hasn't gotten much help at all from our federal government in the year since that happened. You know, this is an area that needs all the business it can get. And so finally, there's one proponent for the video game industry. And of course, his argument isn't coming from the moral standpoint. It's just coming from a capitalist standpoint, where it's saying, you putting some sort of an impediment on this industry is going to make it so they'll never come here. Which is interesting, I think. It's an interesting argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of cool that standpoint, not just a violence or moral standpoint, just from economically, this not only Louisiana but every state in the country needs all the help they can get.
Yeah, and
it's an interesting view.
And the video game industry is a huge industry. You can't, limiting that, making it so that industry can't come into your state because you've got too many laws against them. I mean, you're restricting, you're taking yourself out of a pot of money that could potentially be huge. So, I don't know. I don't know what, do you know what the market share of video games is offhand, Tanner?
Well, they, video games gross more than the movie industry, I know that.
Really?
So, I mean, that's huge in itself.
Yeah.
And they're saying, they're saying that video games are going to become the dominant, sort of entertainment medium of the coming century, so.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely. I think most politicians are shooting themselves in the foot because they're gonna ban video games, and then when the video game industry are welcoming and people see that this industry is thriving, it's employing people, and it's bringing money into the local economy, people are gonna be a little bit pissed that their person is sponsoring a bill or whatever sort of legislation against it that is uncalled for and just cutting them totally out of this market share. I'd be pissed.
And I think World of Warcraft has changed everyone's sort of opinions of what video games can do, just because I think they've now broken the 8 million player mark.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of changed everyone's opinions of what video games are capable of doing in terms of generating money and revenue.
I have some stats here that I'd like to read regarding the video game industry. The U.S. computer and video game software sales grew 4% in 2004 to $7.3 billion, more than doubling of industry software sales since 1996. This was as of last year this stuff came out, so up to date, but you can only imagine it's increased since then. 75% of American heads of households play computer and video games. In 2004, more than 248 million computer and video games were sold, almost two games for every household in America. God. The average game player is 30 years old and has been playing games for 9.5 years.
That's what shocks a lot of people, I think.
Well, yeah, because people always think of video games as a kid's
realm. They're so not kids' things anymore.
Casey, do you find that when you tell people that you're a gamer, because I find it in my own life, but do you find it when you tell people you're a gamer, they almost, like, look down on you at first?
Oh, big time, man. Whenever I tell them somebody will ask what I did last night, and I'll say I just played Warcraft for a few hours, I get looked down on. But if I ask them what they did, I watched TV for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And somehow that's better than me playing a video game.
Yeah. Well, even when we were at the island yesterday, it was me, you, your girlfriend, and mine, and both of our girlfriends were kind of snickering at us because of our love of World of Warcraft. We were kind of egging them on. We were talking World of Warcraft speak a lot, talking about how my sneakers were soulbound to me and things like that. But at the same time, you know, nothing against them because they're not into video games. You can't convert someone that easily. But at the same time, you know, that is kind of representative of most people do think, you know, they kind of look at it as like, oh, that's a nerd's realm. If you're this age and you're playing, you're kind of a nerd. But it's not true.
Yeah, but think about
that. When the EverQuest got huge, we had buddies that played it, and I think you guys played it for a while too. And I tried it and hated it. And so then whenever it got up, I just thought you guys were the biggest nerds in the universe.
That's
but
true.
Warcraft's different. That one's cool.
But think about how the scope of the world is going to change when our generation or the generation preceding us are the oldest people in existence, and they will all be playing video games.
Well, they grew up.
Yeah,
we're like that first generation. I was just saying we're that first generation of video games players. You know, I think when I was five was when three or maybe four or five was when Nintendo came out. So like we grew up with it.
Yeah, but it's
like, all the way through. And so we're the first generation of video games player. And like you said, every generation behind us, under us, is going to be having video games in their whole life.
Yeah, it's the stigma will be erased very, very soon, and it'll just be another sort of entertainment medium, and the most popular entertainment medium. And there will no longer be that stigma. People will no longer be able to write them off or just think mm-hmm. they're toys.
And by the way, there's a few more stats I'd like to read off to you, and these are coming from the Entertainment Software Association. But these two are kind of like, these are key into the argument against this legislation, because this legislation that they're aiming at the industry is very narrow and pointed at this one specific thing of, it's kind of like that fight against heavy metal music in the 80s, you know, where they tried to pinpoint that as the source of evil among teens, which it wasn't. But here's a few good stats right now. The average game buyer is 37 years old. In 2005, 95% of computer game buyers and 84% of console game buyers were over the age of 18. This legislation is targeting people under 18, so they're trying to compensate for this about 10% share of the market that might be manipulating the current laws, which with the ESRB ratings. And they're targeting most people who buy it are obviously of legal age to buy the games. The other thing, though, and this is the other... This works into those age demographics. 83% of all games sold in 2004 were rated E for everyone or T for teen. So that leaves 17% of the market was, you know, games that were for adults. You know, but if you've got 84% at the very least of people, you know, buying a game that's or buying games, and that if 3% of those games are for everyone, you got to figure most kids are probably buying the games for everyone.
Well,
you know, the ones rated TV.
And my problem with it is, given those statistics, I want more mature games. I think games are way too safe and immature, mm-hmm. and I want far more mature content, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, how about me? How about my needs, you know? How about filling my market? But they can't because of all this goddamn fire that's coming from, you know, the government.
It's, it's really not even about the like the mature games in general. I think it just takes one, like Grand Theft Auto did,
yeah,
that just blows up, and one parent blames her son's death on Grand Theft Auto, and it just becomes this rolling thing where all the parents get on board, and then like it's starting now, the legislators and the lawmakers are getting on board with it,
mm-hmm.
and so now it just takes one game for everything to start rolling with it.
Yeah.
And like there's a bunch of mature games that have nothing more in it.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, it's just a random shoot 'em up.
Or they're
but
bloody.
Because they swear it's mature.
You know, all it takes is a little bit of blood. I remember in 7th grade when Mortal Kombat came out.
Huge.
The fact that on the Sega version there was blood was like a huge deal among people.
The debate.
Yeah.
Giant.
And I don't recall at one point in my life ever grabbing someone's chin, slightly lifting it up, and then severing their spine and removing it from their body. It never happened in my lifetime. I don't know. Tanner, you were talking that you want more mature games, and that's funny because remember we had that conversation a few weeks ago where you were saying you wanted to enact your rape fantasies on video games. Do you remember that?
Just no, I don't quite remember that conversation.
That must have been something I made up. I'm sorry. I apologize for pinning you as a rapist. Anyway, but I don't know. I could read all these statistics for a while. They're so incredible to digest all this. Or 19% of Americans over the age of 50 played video games. That was 9% increase since 1999. I mean, that shows. I know my grandma plays video games, and she's in her late 70s.
What?
Yeah, she plays. She has a Super Nintendo and a Game Boy. She loves her Game Boy.
Wow.
Yeah. It's. I mean, that's how progressive she is. But there's still people her age who do that. And you're going to tell her that she's not allowed to play a game like Grand Theft Auto? I know my grandma wants to roll with a bunch of gangsters and shoot motherfuckers in the face. I know it. So.
All right, we got to end this. I don't want to edit it.
Yeah. Well, let's end it like a bad breakup. Casey, break up with the audience, please.
It's just not going to work. It's not you. It's me. I apologize. And you can call me whenever you want.
I just won't answer.
All right, so that wraps up this edition. But we'll be back next week, most likely, to talk more about random bullshit. White boy in the wrong place at the right time. Soon as the car door opens, I'll be mine.
We roll up quick and put the pistol to his nose by the look on his face. He probably shit it in his. You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, August 20th, 2006, and distributed on Monday, August 21st, 2006. For more information about this podcast, as well as our literary journal, which is coming out with an issue very soon, please visit www.the-means.com. Ain't you tired of storming, my nigga? Let's ride in. I know a way you can get paid, you can get down, but you can't be afraid. Let's go to the DMV and get an ID. The name says you, but the face is me. Now it's your turn, take my paperwork. Like 1, 2, 3, let's make it work. Then fill out the credit card application, and it's gonna be about 3 weeks of waiting for American Express, Discovery Card, Platinum, Visa, MasterCard. Cause when we was booked and shit, then we was targets. Now we just walk right up and say charge it. To the game, we rockin' brand names. Well known at department store chains. Even got the buzz in the crew for a few things. Popo never know who's the true blame. Stow after stow, you know we kept rolling. Wait 2 weeks, report the car stolen. Repeat the cycle like a laundromat. Like a glitch in the system, it's hard to catch. Coming out the mall with the shopping bags. We can take it right back, then get the cash. Yeah, get a friend, then do it again. Damn right, that's how we pay the rent. Can we really do that? Hell yeah, right there for the taking. Fuck welfare, we say reparations. And you know the grind, get up early, get on the line and just wait, everybody on break, that's part of the game. And when they call your name, Miss Caseworker, let me state my claim. I'm homeless, jobless, times is hard, I'm about hopeless, but I gotta eat regardless. No family to run to, I'm 22. Now tell me what the fuck am I supposed to do? My sad story made her feel close to me. I made her feel like it was an emergency. And when I came to the crib, niggas couldn't believe I came back with a big bag of groceries. Every job I ever had, I had to get them. The first day I find how
trying to pimp the system. Two steps ahead of the manager, getting over on the regular tax, free money out the register. And when I'm working late nights, stocking boxes, I'm creeping they merchandise. And don't put me on dishes, I'm dropping them bitches and taking all day long to mop the kitchen. Shit, we ain't getting paid commission, minimum wage, modern day slave conditions. Got me flipping burgers with no power and can't even buy one off what I make in an hour. I'm not the one the kids ask for the top position. I take mine off the top like a politician. Where I'm from, doing dirt is a part of living. I got miles to feed, dog, I got to get it.
Hell yeah, you down the road, my nigga. Hell yeah, you better get your hands dirty, my nigga. Hell yeah, your mama need money and things, my nigga. Hell yeah, well, let's ride then. Hell yeah, come on, come on.
If you claiming gangster, then bang on the system and show that you ready to ride. Get off me, oh, we got to get over. We steady on.